Thank you. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I know that we have experienced attorneys today, so you know the rules. But before we begin, I'm going to have the marshal call the case.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Jessen, Judge Koch, the Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding. First case this morning is 821-0540. David Patrick Curran versus Commissioner of Public Safety.
Once again, good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I know that you both are experienced and know that you each have 15 minutes, starting with appellant, and then appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. This is being recorded and will be posted on the court's website. So at the beginning of your arguments, please state your name for the record. And with that, Mr. Ramsey, are you ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor.
You may then.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Charles Ramsey, and I represent the appellant, David Curran, in this appeal. Mr. Curran is appealing the district court order denying his motion for additional discovery. Specifically, Mr. Curran is seeking discovery of the source code or software that runs nearly every aspect of the computer instrument that analyzed his breath. As a child growing up, none of us had computers in our homes. Today, computers have become ubiquitous. Nearly all of us has a computer in our home, or we carry a computer around with us throughout the day. These computers, our phones, are many times more powerful than the first home computers. My child brought home a computer from school during the height of the COVID crisis. The schools now apparently provide computers to every student. These computers, as we know, often update the software on a regular basis, sometimes at the most awkward time, say working while we're working on a brief or a memo. Today, unlike 20 years ago, most of us realize that these computers are run by software. And we now all know that this software is the written instructions that controls nearly every aspect of a computer. Two decades ago, when the defense bar first wanted to analyze the breath test software of the Intoxilizer 5000, we sought review. And the Minnesota Supreme Court ultimately granted review and set the standard for granting discovery in Underdahl 2 from April of 2009. In that case, the Minnesota Supreme Court found that if a driver can show that the software somehow relates to their guilt or innocence, then analysis of that software should be granted. We analyzed the software. And we ultimately found fatal flaws in that software, that so said the district court finding after a three-week trial, that in some cases would render a driver's breath inadequate, causing them to be charged with providing a deficient sample and refusing the test. In 2010, the state of Minnesota decided to buy new computers or new breath test instruments. And they entered into a contract with National Patent Analytical Systems out of Mansfield, Ohio. Before they did that, however, they published a request for proposal that required whatever company took this contract that it provide the software, the source code, if a district court ordered it. This was so important to the state of Minnesota and the taxpayers of Minnesota that it actually was included in the contract with National Patent from 2010. The issue before the court today is, did Mr. Curran make a threshold showing of relevance? The trial court found that Mr. Curran did not. Instead, the trial court seemed to indicate that because Mr. Stoltz never looked at the petitioner's test results in this case, that there was an insufficient showing. However, I'd like to discuss what Dr. Stoltz, Professor Stoltz, what his testimony shows, and the other documents that we submitted as evidence in this case. First of all, the Minnesota Supreme Court in Underdahl 2 found that Brunner, B-R-U-N-N-E-R, had made a sufficient showing of relevance. And as part of his materials, Brunner included documents from the Chun case, C-H-U-N, out of New Jersey. We included that exact same document in this case. If it's good enough for the Minnesota Supreme Court, then I believe it should be good enough here. We also included a paper from Mr. Workman, which was cited as well. And finally, we have the partial transcript of Dr. Stoltz. Dr. Stoltz stated in his testimony that analysis of the source code may reveal deficiencies that could challenge the reliability of the data master, and that the source code relates to whether or not Mr. Curran's alcohol concentration is 0.08 or more.
But isn't your problem, counsel, that Judge Askegaard found that Mr. Stoltz had not identified anything particularly relevant as it related to the person's test that he was dealing with in the case he testified, which wasn't your client, it was someone else?
Well, Your Honor, I think I agree with you that the trial court found that there, quote, is absolutely no evidence that raises any specific concerns that petitioner's test was faulty. But that's not the standard. Brunner, and before the Minnesota Supreme Court case, didn't identify any errors with that particular test. In the 12 cases that this court analyzed post Underdahl 2, none of those drivers found specific errors in those cases. Your Honor, if I could present evidence that there was a specific error in Mr. Curran's case, I wouldn't be before you right now challenging the district court's order denying additional discovery. Instead, I would have brought a motion not asking for discovery, but suppressing that test. So it's a different standard, the standard that the Attorney General is seeking this court to adopt.
But in a civil case, counsel, in a civil case, we don't suppress. This isn't a criminal case. So we're basically talking about discovery, aren't we?
Well, we are talking about discovery. But if I had evidence showing that something was wrong with this test in this case, I would be asking the court, you're right, it was inartful of me to use the phrase suppression. I would be asking the district court to find that the test results are not valid, reliable, and accurate under 169A.53, subdivision 3B10. And that would require the district court then to rescind the revocation. I'm not seeking rescission just yet. I'm asking for additional discovery so that I may attempt to meet my burden. So I want to address the 17 cases that this court has analyzed post Underdahl 2, so after April 30th, 2009. In five of those 17 cases, the drivers presented no evidence whatsoever, didn't even make an attempt to present evidence to demonstrate that the source code was relevant to their test results. And so they lost. However, in the other 12, where the drivers at least made some attempt, this court found in two cases, in the prosecutor's appeal and state cases, that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in granting disclosure of the software. However, in the other 10 cases, drivers appealed district court orders denying the disclosure of the source code. And in all 10 of those cases, this court actually found that the district court abused its discretion when it declined to grant the driver's motion for additional discovery. This case is no different than those 10 cases where this court previously found in every single one that the trial court abused its discretion. Not only did we present evidence from the Chun case, which the Minnesota Supreme Court found to be sufficient. Not only did we present the document from Mr. Workman, which was found to be sufficient, but as I indicated earlier, Professor Stoltz, his partial transcript in and of itself meets the threshold that's required here. He explained the modern programming process and gave definitions of what source code is. This is on pages 6 to 7. And then on pages 9 to 12 of the transcript, he discussed programming errors generally associated with computer source code. He explained that the DMT is a measurement device. It's not the same as measuring the length of a table, but instead it's a complicated indirect measure. He testified in detail that the electrical signal is converted by a data acquisition system and from an analog electrical signal to a digital number, and the number itself is converted into an alcohol concentration. He noted this is complicated by the measurement of breath flow, sample acceptance, measurement of different wavelengths using various filters, and interfering substances such as acetone, which can erroneously add to the final result if not detected and properly accounted for by the software. The instrument conducts numerous self-tests as well. On page 17 of the transcript, he said all of this is controlled by the software. He said the software is relevant to the validity and reliability of the test result. In fact, the actual measurement sequence is in the software from page 43 of the transcript. He did find issues with DMT breath test results in Minnesota. And he said whether these are anomalies or discrepancies depends on how the final result is actually being generated, and software review would identify the cause of these errors on page 36 to page 37. He testified that software and code review is needed to review the reliability of the test results. In his expert opinion, analysis of the source code may reveal deficiencies that could challenge the reliability of the data master and relates to whether or not Mr. Curran's alcohol concentration is 0.08 or more. And that's on page 25 of the partial transcript. The Attorney General tries to make irrelevant counterarguments. The Attorney General will say that it submitted affidavits saying that we don't need software review to determine validity and reliability. With most of the cases post Underdahl 2, the Attorney General had submitted similar affidavits. It's a threshold showing. It's not a balancing test. And here we met our initial minimal threshold. The Attorney General is going to argue that the DMT is on the National Conforming Products List. Therefore, it must be impervious to additional attack or review. But the Intoxilizer 5000 was on the same conforming products list. The Attorney General will argue that it goes through annual certification and validation, as was the, the Intoxilizer 5000 had gone through validation studies as well. The Attorney General is going to argue that Professor Stoltz never looked at the test results in this case. But again, that was the same in nearly every other case that this court looked at post Underdahl 2. The Attorney General wants this court to state that the burden is on the driver here to show that analysis of the source code will reveal deficiencies in the source code. That's not the standard. The Minnesota Supreme Court said instead the standard is that source code analysis may, as impossible, not likely, reveal deficiencies in the source code that go to the validity, reliability, and accuracy. The commissioner also argues that discovery is limited in a consent case. This is the same law, or the relevant provisions are identical to those that were analyzed by this court in 2009 through 2011, in all of those post-Underdahl 2 cases. If the court has no questions, then I will remain silent and save my 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Judge Jessen, Judge Kirk, any questions?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Ramsey. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Moan.
Morning. I am ready, Your Honors.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Nicholas Moan. I am here on behalf of the respondent in this matter, the Commissioner of Public Safety. Appellant is relying entirely on litigation from the previous round of litigation with the intoxilizer more than 13 years ago. Things are significantly different since then. Not only do we have an entirely different breath testing instrument, but the rules of civil procedure regarding discovery are substantially different. At the time of Underdahl 2 in 2009, the criminal rules of discovery were very similar to the civil rules of discovery. Since then, we now have 2602B, which is substantially more stringent than the discovery requirements at the time of the previous round of source code litigation, which then was just a relevant showing. 2602B still requires that the potential discovery be relevant. And in this case, the district court's order shows a clear analysis of the submissions of both parties and demonstrates why the source code in this case was not relevant. In addition, 2602B requires an analysis of the importance of the discovery in resolving the issues. This ties directly into this court's decision holding in Abbott, the seminal source code case in the civil arena, that discovery is relevant only if it is reasonably calculated to lead to admissible evidence. And this requirement also ties directly into the district court's determination that the appellant did not show any evidence that would indicate any reasonable likelihood of discovery of the source code showing an error that impacted the appellant's test results. The submissions of the respondent detailing the sufficiency of the validation testing done on the DMT, the submissions of the respondent from a computer scientist showing that source code review without first identifying actual errors is fruitless, and the fact that the appellant acknowledging this now at the argument today, at the motion hearing, and unable to make a showing in his evidence, appellant wasn't able to show that there was anything specifically wrong with the test in this case. At the motion hearing, counsel for appellant stated on the face of the test, there was nothing wrong with it on page 13 from the transcript. He then goes on to say that this is exactly why he needs the source code. This, along with the analysis of the evidence, shows that this is nothing more than a purely speculative discovery request, which is prohibited, particularly in the arenas of implied consent proceedings, where discovery is limited by statute and the court that correspondingly has a gatekeeping function. Additionally, 2602B requires a proportionality analysis. Now we have the benefit of history to look back at the previous round of source code litigation and see that the discovery request in this case is simply not proportional. Any benefit to the driver from the previous round of source code litigation was far outweighed by what it took to get there. What happened previously should not happen, and under 2602B, it would not happen. In the memorandum in support of the discovery request, appellant's attorney states, quote, source code review is unique in that it only needs to be performed once and is then applicable to every case conducted under the version of the software. Index number 10, page 14. Additionally, in the Kramer transcript submitted by appellant, Mr. Stultz stated that he had no specific concerns with Mr. Kramer's test, that his concerns applied generally to all DMT tests and instruments, page 42 of index number 7. Counsel for appellant wants to go down the same road we did last time with the intoxilizer and the previous round of source code litigation, but the civil rules of discovery have changed since then, and the cases appellant relied upon were decided under entirely different standards. Proportionality and the importance of discovery in resolving the issues are implicit in the district court's finding that there was no reasonable likelihood that the discovery would show an error impacting the test results and the district court's finding that there was no good cause for the disclosure of the discovery. And tying back in that proportionality, Your Honors, appellant argues that there were fatal flaws found with the intoxilizer in the previous round of litigation, which was not the case. It was found that in certain circumstances, the machine could receive too much air and not accept a sample. But the overall determination of the final case was that when the intoxilizer produced a final sample, it was valid. And this was, again, a different instrument. So looking back at history, this request is clearly not proportionate. Appellant argues that we are trying to change the standards and that it was a clear abuse of discretion for the district court to require him to make a specific showing for disclosure of the source code. But this is not the standard that the district court held appellant to. The district court explicitly cited to this court's decision in Abbott and to the Minnesota Rule of Civil Procedure 2602B. The district court in its conclusion stated, quote, "There is absolutely no evidence that raises any specific concerns that petitioner's test was faulty or that would indicate any reasonable likelihood of discovering a source code error that impacted the test results. Petitioner therefore has not established that discovery of the source code would be relevant to the accuracy of petitioner's DMT test, nor has good cause been shown to allow such discovery." This is on page 7 of the district court's order. Simply noting, Your Honors, that appellant failed to show anything specific or wrong with his test is not requiring him to make such a showing. But that failure is something that should be considered as part of the totality of the circumstances when the district court is analyzing all of the submissions. And the lack of evidence specific to appellant's tests, along with the submissions of respondent, both of which were analyzed by the court, and appellant counsel's own admission that there was nothing wrong with the test, show that this is, again, nothing but a purely speculative discovery request, which is prohibited. Your Honor, the appellant's counsel talked about the submissions that they provided being similar to those accepted by Brunner in the Underdahl 2 case. He talked specifically about the submission from the Chun case. This was Exhibit 6 to appellant's submissions. This was a packet of information provided by the defendants in the Chun case, and it is not at all relevant to the present matter for several reasons. First of which, the Chun case was involving an entirely separate instrument from the DMT. It was about the ALCO test. So any findings about that instrument's source code would have no applicability to the DMT. Additionally, the packet submitted by the appellant was not representative of the final outcome in the Chun case, where the Supreme Court of New Jersey, much like the final litigation around the intoxilizer source code in Minnesota, the Supreme Court in New Jersey stated that when the ALCA test produced a final result, it was sufficiently scientifically reliable. The final findings from the Chun case are submitted by respondent in this case as Exhibit D to our affidavit, which was filed as index numbers 19 through 20 in two parts. The appellant states that discovery is a threshold consideration, not a balancing test. But this court in Abbott does require that the submissions of both parties be considered. While it explicitly states that a district court does not need to credit the submissions of one party, both submissions do need to be considered. And in this case, the district court in its order provided a thorough analysis of the submissions of both parties. Its determinations were therefore supported by the evidence. And as a result, it was not a clear abuse of discretion for the district court to deny appellant's motion for discovery. If the court has no further questions, At this time, I would rest and ask that the court uphold the determinations of the district court. Thank you.
Judge Jessen, Judge Kirk, any questions? Thank you, counsel. Mr. Ramsey? Whoops, you're muted.
Thank you, Your Honor. The commissioner is asking this court to apply a different standard. I just heard the commissioner argue that it should apply what appears to be a totality of circumstances test. This would be a new test. It's not listed in any of the prior rulings from the Minnesota Court of Appeals or from the Minnesota Supreme Court or from this court. Furthermore, it's arguing that it should apply this new proportionality test, but this issue is not before the court. It was not addressed by the trial court. And the respondent agrees in his own filings on footnote 3 that the only issue here is relevancy.
So let's look at Mr. Ramsey, if you could, and you may be getting to this, could you during your rebuttal please address the argument that I heard, which is we have to look at this under a higher standard because of changes to the interpretation of Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedures 26.02b, you know, which is changed since the Underwood decision. So if you could address that, I would appreciate it.
I think that one change, Your Honor, goes to proportionality, which is outside the scope of relevance. And that's all we looked at here. But I will address that, Your Honor. So proportionality. So this is software that controls every aspect of this computer device that analyzed my client's breath alcohol concentration. Today, in a driver's license revocation is much more impactful than just a loss of a driver's license for a few days. People lose their jobs over this. Families are at stake. The financial validity of their families. It can also count as a prior in a subsequent criminal case. This is now more criminal than it was 15 years ago. In addition, if we're going to look at proportionality, we have to look at how reasonable it is to expect that this be turned over. In the RFP, it lists that this is an expectation that it be turned over. I believe in the RFP or in the maybe it was in the contract that this software can be put on a disk and sent to an expert. In fact, Professor Stoltz talks about that it could be put on a disk and mailed, and he could have it analyzed in less than 30 days. So if we are going to look at proportionality, which I am not conceding we should, I don't think it's before the court, clearly discovery of the source code is proportional to what is at stake here. And I disagree with counsel. I don't think Abbott is a seminal case. This court itself has said that Underdahl 2 is a seminal case in Hansen versus Commissioner, 2011 Westlaw 9166, where this court found that the trial court abused its discretion in denying the source code motion. That's a January 4th, 2011 opinion. The commissioner appealed that, but review was denied on March 15th, 2011. Just to summarize, it comes down to this. Today, computers are ubiquitous. All of us either carry one around constantly or have one in our home. We now know today, unlike our predecessors, that software is the computer set of written instructions that runs every aspect of a computer, and that there are flaws in computer instructions. In fact, just a couple years ago, the Boeing 737 Supermax went down, killing hundreds of people each time. Why? all that was done was black box analysis. And here, all we have is an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that was produced by the very computer that we're seeking to learn more about. This, the commissioner wants to argue that if the computer didn't self-report an error, there can't be one. Accordingly, we would ask that this court find that the trial court abused its discretion and overturn its order and grant petitioner's motion for source code. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is now submitted.